Hey, y'all, if you enjoy watching your podcast, which seems kind of weird, watching your podcast, but some people really enjoy that. So we have a YouTube channel. You can find it at Heather Parady, P-A-R-A-D-Y. It's also linked up in the show notes. You can hit subscribe. And several of these interviews are actually in person, so you can watch that. Again, that is at Heather Parady on YouTube. On this man's Instagram, he said that he quit his $400,000 a year job, moved to paradise, and now makes content like this.
I live in Punta Cana and do local things. And if you're going to come visit, get off the resort and go try a few local places. Here are three for you to go check.
But that is not what you are about to hear. Jamie Gruber is an entrepreneur, mastermind leader, and the host of the Tribe of Millionaires podcast. In 2021, he left his W-2 behind. Fast forward 3 years, he became a millionaire and relocated his family to the beaches of the Dominican Republic. But that's not what you are about to hear. Jamie is a multifamily investor and the co-founder of Multifamily and More networking communities with over 10,000 members in over 20 cities. But my friend, that's not what you're about to hear. Today's conversation is a deep one. And although I set out to talk to Jamie about content creation and creativity, the conversation turned quickly when a topic got brought up that I've never thought about before. Partnering with our ego. What? And although this is a totally politically incorrect thing to say, Jamie believes that healing our ego and sometimes listening to it, well, that's how you accomplish big goals and even make an impact in this world. But what about morality and serving other people? Well, we're going to get into that too. Y'all need to grab a cup of coffee and your Snuggie for this one. I'm not even playing. This, my friends, is the incredible Jamie Gruber.
I don't believe in putting down the ego. I used to. And that I learned was the worst thing that I'd ever done. We vilify trauma. We vilify inner child, like broken inner child. We vilify ego. None of this happens without learning how to harness and partner with the ego. That's a deep, deep, deep question. I'm going to try not to get too way off the rails and lose you or your audience.
No,
on this
go
as
off
far
the
as
rails. Friends, before we get into this conversation with Jamie, my audio was whack in this. I have no idea what happened, and we did our very best to restore it, but it is what it is. So please don't let it distract you. I warned you. I start this conversation off with Jamie, asking him, "Yo, Jamie, listen. You know, looking at your Instagram, seeing all of your successes, your contents popping, what do people not see or understand about you when looking at your profile?"
I would say, if you're looking at my Instagram profile specifically,
yep,
you would assume that I am independently wealthy, living on a beach, one of these guys who just, you know, is out there bragging about this big life and his days are filled with margaritas and Mai Tais.
They're not?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's funny. I get that. Like, man, retiring on the beach. Like, I never said I retired. It says nowhere that I retired. Or, man, you're living the dream life. I'm like, look, I'm living a life that I dreamed about for sure. Mm-hmm. But you know this. Dream life is all in the eye of the beholder. If I'm living a way you want to live, it's a dream. But for me, it's just life. Just like you're now living your dream life. But for you, it's just life. For other people, it might be a dream. So I think there's an assumption that, you know, I had this $400,000 a year job. He must have banked all this cash sitting on millions of dollars because he made all this money. And he's just able to Scrooge McDuck his way through paradise, living in the Dominican Republic, throws all of his money in one bedroom and just kind of goes in there and gets it when he needs it. And that is the furthest thing from the truth. I'm in full grind mode. I'm in recreation mode for who I am and what I'm doing. That $400,000 a year job paid well, but it wasn't at all for 21 years at all what my soul wanted. So I'm in pursuit of my soul's work. And I don't think you get that by looking at the outward projection of what I talk about on that page.
Oh, I love this. So it came up for me when you were talking is this idea of like intentional creation. You know, it's easy looking at the fruit of something or looking at somebody's page and making all these assumptions, like all this stuff came easy. But there was a point where you made an intentional decision to create the life that you're living now. Not that it's all kicks and giggles, but, you know, moving your family out of the country, quitting your job, living a certain lifestyle. And back to your point, it's not that that was just an easy choice and everything fell into place. And I have a lot of resistance around hearing it because that means I'm accountable.
And I have to own that the things that I'm seeing right now are in part my manifestation and my own creation, which I don't like that because sometimes I feel a little bit, I like blaming other people, Jamie. But tell me, bring us back to that point where you're like, F it, where I'm going to go all in.
You know, it's funny. What do they say? Like, you're a 5-year overnight success. So quitting the job was not a one day I didn't have it one day, or I'm sorry, one day I had the job, one day I didn't. There was a lot of stuff that I did in advance of that. This was both deep work for myself, masterminds, coaching, counseling, as well as building and grinding and trying to figure out what is my place in the world if it's not this gig paying me $400,000 a year. The moment, though, the moment was, it would have been February 1st-ish, 2021, somewhere around that day, January 31st, February 1st, on a drive from Michigan to Florida, specifically south of St. Augustine, Florida, on a Saturday, so whatever that day was back then, mid-afternoon, 3 hours from my destination, which was Hollywood, Florida. We were going down there in COVID for a month while I still had my job. Nobody had to be in an office. It's cold in Michigan, wanted to be somewhere warm. So my boss allowed me to go down to Florida for a month with my family. So I'm driving alone. Wife and kids were flying. And I brought the toys and the dogs and all that stuff in a minivan for 3 days while driving. And I had been contemplating on this drive, man, I've done a few things. I've got some runway. I could make this leap and take a shot. Maybe. And then I get this call from a guy that I worked with in Boston years before that does not call me. Nice guy. But we're not buddies or anything. Yeah. And he told me about a coworker that was a few years older than me, also had two boys like I do, that went into the hospital the night before with some chest pain and never came out. His name was Paul. He was a healthy guy, 48, 49 years old at the time, by all accounts, active, lived up in the sticks of Vermont, like to get out and do things outdoors, chop wood, whatever, guy's guy. And it was his time. Left two boys behind, his wife suddenly. And man, in that moment, I'll tell you, I remember looking in the rearview mirror and just almost seeing him, maybe not literally, but my memory of it was just this feeling of like, holy cow, that could be me. And it was in that moment that the longest journey took place, which I believe is from 99% sure to 100% sure. That 1% move is the biggest leap. It's easy to go from 0 to 99% sure of something. It's easy to kind of like build momentum. There's so much room. Oh, yeah, I'm feeling this. Yeah, I can quit. Yep, this will be great. I can go do this thing. But then you get to that, but am I? You get to that 99%. And stepping across the line, that 100%, that moment codified it for me. And that was the second I decided, gave my notice a month later, and I was gone a month after that.
Because you were feeling dissatisfaction before then. In fact, I think, tell me if I'm wrong on this, you thought it was dissatisfaction with your position. So you worked harder and got even more advanced in up the corporate ladder, and that didn't bring you happiness. So it had been like kind of a dissatisfaction, uneasiness. I think what comes up for me when I heard that part of your story was sometimes we feel guilt about being dissatisfied when things are good, right? $400,000 is quite a bit of money. You have, you've worked your ass off for this. At this point, you have a family. And it's so interesting to me how in our Western culture, it's pushed on us so much to achieve, and how many people are actually miserable at that point. But then there's a guilt there where it's like, but come on, man, like I should be grateful. This is everything that I've worked so hard for. And did you feel guilt at all? Is that the reason that you held on?
I think I hid behind gratitude. I think that could be a dangerous thing that many of us do. Guilt, maybe, but I definitely hid behind gratitude. To your point,
what do you mean?
Making a great living. My family, my wife doesn't have to work, my kids, whatever they want. I've got equity in this company, big equity, like hundreds of thousands of unvested equity that one day I'll get. So how can you not be grateful for that? How ungrateful are you when there's people dying in X country, or there's war in Y country, or there's kids or people in the street that are living homeless right now? Like, how dare you? How dare you? So I think for me, it was for a long time, it was like, you know what? I need to be grateful. And we all do that. And we do need to be grateful. But there's a line I think you can cross from being truly grateful for what you have, but not being guilty or feeling guilty, to your point, for wanting more, and then allowing gratitude to sort of hold you in place. I learned this from a really interesting guy. I think it's a dangerous tipping point where you can use gratitude to hold yourself in place, because you shouldn't. You shouldn't want more. Like, you should just be grateful for what you have. And I did that for a long time. Well, I got a good thing. I'm making a good living. I'm able to take care of my family, good health benefits. I need to just be grateful. And I stood there for years.
What's the more though? What do you think you were looking for?
It's funny because I didn't know. I really didn't know. And I think that's part of the process that that you learn, especially if you're a corporate person, W-2 person. If you are, you likely went through all of your schooling, 13 years of kindergarten through 12th grade, 4 years of college, maybe more. So 17, 18, 19 years of school is the first chunk of your life. Then you would get a career like I did. And I was in it for 21 years, 17 years when I kind of had this epiphany, this might not be for me. And it took me 4 years to exit. But in total, it was 21 years. But at that 17 year mark, it was like, all right, well, what else would I do? What else can I do? Mm-hmm. It was hard for me to decide like, well, what do I want? Like, I don't even know. What am I good at? What can I make money doing? All of that stuff. And I think it's because, I believe it's because most of us, because we've done 17 years or 18 years of school, we've done whatever, 10, 15, 20 years of a corporate career, that the next move, the decision of what we're going to do next, it needs to be the next 20 or the next 30 years. Like, we've got to be able to see this for the next 30 years. And what I've learned in my 3 years outside of the corporate environment as a self-employed entrepreneur, and as you defined yourself, and I love this, I've started to do this myself, a creator, but every year or 6 months or sometimes every month, there's a pivot, there's a change, there's a need to adjust. And it at first feels like you're erratic or all over the place, and others will judge you for that. So I think it's important who you surround yourself with. Great. But I think that's like true freedom. And that's probably more what we are naturally, like adaptable. That doesn't mean you just like, I started this business, I'm going to shut it down and start. That's not what I mean. But I started with the idea that, well, all right, what do I enjoy and what's practical? Real estate. So I go into real estate and I'm buying real estate, and that seems like the thing. And then I don't like real estate. I love what it does. I don't like doing it. So then it was like, well, but I like networking in real estate. So I started doing things around the networking space in real estate. And then that evolved to more broad discussions, broad branding and all of that stuff. So it's a constant evolution. I didn't know what I wanted to do. But if I'm looking back now with the benefit of hindsight, I wanted to always be like an NFL broadcaster as a kid, 16, 17 years old. I love talking. I love communicating. I love telling stories. I love influencing and inspiring people with what I see and sharing that, or what I've seen and sharing that. So NFL broadcasting felt like the thing. I like football, but it just, that wasn't the medium. And as we advanced as a society, we've got this podcasting, YouTube, influencer thing that you can do now. So I learned through a lot of iterations that I've got a song in me. It's kind of that quote from Thoreau. You heard that quote?
Yeah. Don't doubt the song in you.
Massive men lead lives of quiet desperation and go to their grave with their songs still in them. Truthfully, my song is to inspire and motivate other people to be the best versions that they could be of themselves. But I've learned that my purpose truly is simply to be seen. That's it. I was born to be seen. That's a hard purpose to accept because there's a lot of egotism, or it sounds like a lot of egotism in there.
Tell me more.
I went through this. Go ahead.
What does that mean, to be seen? That is so interesting.
So I've gone through a lot of work on this where if you were to ask me 2 years ago, I would have said, my purpose in life is what I just said my mission is, which is to inspire and motivate others to live their best life. That's a mission. That mission can pivot. That's what my opinion is. But true purpose, like why you are, why you were made, why you're on this earth, I think is a layer deeper than what most of us are willing to admit. I do these solo weekends, 2-3 days on my own with intention, just getting off the grid, putting the phone down and like meditating and journaling and just working through and almost detoxing my brain for 3 days, no kids, no wife, nothing. So on a solo weekend, I go through this exercise. And by the end of it, I came out of this like deep meditation. I started writing things down and it was like, holy cow. I do want to inspire and motivate others to live their best life. But that mission comes from the fact that I think I was just born and put on this earth to be seen. There are people that aren't meant to be visible, to be seen. They're better, like I'm the guy or gal behind the scenes. I'm the person you never hear of that makes it all work. And man, that's a great purpose. Part of me wishes I had it. But there's something about me, in me, that craves and desires and feels as though I'm in the best service to others to fulfill my mission simply by being seen. And again, I really battled with this. Like, is that all ego? Is that just, me trying to heal some childhood wound where I didn't feel seen? Maybe, I don't know. But that purpose feels very much aligned. If I am seen, then I am really good, I believe. The gift I have, I've always say, I'm not born with height, pigment, or good looks, but I was born with this ability to take a message and communicate it passionately in such a way that it touches somebody on the other side. So The only way to get that to more people and fulfill the mission of inspiring and motivating others to live their best life is to be seen.
Okay, y'all, if you're not watching this on YouTube, my mouth is like dropped open. Jamie, I don't hear people say what you just said. It's freeing. And this is why, going back to kind of the gratitude and hiding behind things, I know in my life I have kind of hidden behind this kind of servant mentality, this thing, which sounds good on the surface, but honestly, it comes from like deep conditioning, not necessarily always sincere, comes from guilt, sometimes feeling like, hey, everything needs to sound like it's for other people or whatever. And you giving yourself permission to say, I was put on this earth to be seen. I'm a communicator. I'm a storyteller. I'm a creative. I love being in front of people and communicating a message, and the freedom that recently you've stepped into to broaden what that could even look like. It's so cool. And we'll get to that in a minute, but dig into that a little bit more for me, because
I'd love to.
Letting go of that ego, man, that's years and years and years conditioning. And I don't know if you grew up religious or not or whatever, but damn, that I want to be that free to say that, because I align with what you just said. I don't know if I'm there yet.
I would change what you said in terms of the purpose of to serve the purpose of what you just talked about. I do want to go a layer deeper, because I think ego is the through line here. When you hear somebody say, hey, my whole purpose in life is for other people to see me, like I said before, it comes across as egotistical. I don't believe in putting down the ego. I used to. And that I learned, and I'll explain how, was the worst thing that I'd ever done. What I've learned to do is partner with the ego, satisfy the ego. Let me put it this way. Let's just say there's a goal that I have, or that I give you. And I say, it's a big goal. It's a hard one. And I put it across the room and I say to you, Heather, you go get it, or send your ego to go after it. Who's going to get there first?
The ego.
Your ego is going to get there first. This idea, the Stoics and everything else of like, you know, ego is the enemy, your ego is not your amigo, all of that. I get it, because ego does tend to be the thing at the center of anything bad that you do. You know, you insult somebody, you act like a jerk or whatever. That's all ego driven. But I learned through a psychedelic experience, some things that I did, again, on this journey of like, oh my God, I'm this corporate guy. How dare I try to go outside of that? I went to mushrooms. I literally went to mushrooms with a guide to try to figure this out. And I went into that ceremony saying, what is it that's blocking me from being the best version of myself? And the psychedelic experience was a very dark one. So there was this sort of almost evil present, demonic, devil-like presence that came after me in this deep psychedelic experience. And then I worked with an integrator, a psychologist after, who explained to me and talked to me through it. She's like, I think this is your ego. How do you feel about it? I'm like, oh, ego's bad. She's like, yeah. Your ego essentially came and said, hey, you want to know how to be the best version of you? Stop kicking me to the corner. I'm the reason you've achieved goals that you've achieved. I'm the reason that you're safe and protected when others are insulting you. I'm the reason. I'm there with you trying to help and push you forward. All you see me as is the worst version of me, which is the part that gets too far and goes over the top and insults people or whatever. You keep kicking me to the curb. Nothing's going to work for you. You partner with me, it can work. And I set out on a long journey of trying to heal my relationship with my ego. So when I flash forward to that solo weekend, when I came out of this meditation and to be seen was right at the forefront, you're in kind of a deep state, right? Meditation, long weekend, no phone, just really your brain is so clear. You're feeling much more connected and maybe vibrating at a different level at that point. I said that, like, is this my ego? And I was like, yeah, sure. And that's okay. That's partnering with the ego, in my opinion. That's my ego saying, hey, look, I need a cut here. I need a piece of this. I like to be seen. I like significance. Tony Robbins calls it one of the six human needs. I like significance, my ego says to me. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, ego, I'm going to give you significance. I'm going to admit this to be seen. Let me just do a check here. Does it serve authentically who I am? And does it serve others? Because I believe in service to others. You know what? It does. I have to admit that. I have evidence that shows that when I am seen, it has a positive impact mostly on other people. So what is wrong with saying to be seen if it satisfies the ego, which is part of us, not something to kick to the curb? It's something that we absolutely need to harness and partner with, but also serves others. What's wrong with that is what I came to the conclusion of.
This is like the most badass conversation I've had in a while.
I've seen some of your guests. That's a big compliment.
Let's if you're cool with it, I'm going to kick all this other stuff to the curb real quick, because let's just go here. This is where we need to go. Last night, I'm driving down the road. I get a phone call. It's a woman who, her and her husband makes movies, and she was talking to me about, you know, producing and some of the behind the scenes stuff with film, and saying, you know, I really think you'll be good at this, and we want to get you involved in XYZ. She goes, do you really want, because I've been taking acting classes for years and done some short films and stuff like that. She goes, do you really want to pursue the acting, storytelling, like in front of camera stuff, or are you cool being behind the scenes? Because you're really good at it. And I am. And there's something inside of me that's just like, ugh. Like, I love being on camera and I love communicating. And I love storytelling. And when I hung up the phone with her and I started just, I had a 2-hour drive. I was just really wrestling with this, Jamie. It's so fun. We're having this conversation. Cause I was like, Heather, what is wrong with your ego that you want to be in front of the camera so much? What I'm hearing you say is liberating, but I'm not sure I know how I partner with my ego. Is there a healthy way to partner with your ego and a non-healthy way? And how do you gauge that?
That's a deep, deep, deep question. I'm going to try not to get too way off the rails and lose you or your audience.
Go off the rails. I'm ready.
So let me give you the ascension for me and then what I do now, because it wasn't something I learned in regular consciousness, if you will. I told you about the first psychedelic experience. Five grams of mushrooms on a couch with a psychologist, crazy music. Evil ego comes after me and tells me, this is why you're not the best version of yourself, is because you keep kicking me to the curb. I then went through these other sort of spiritual healings, if you will. One's called constellation healing. Constellation healing is you get in a room with strangers, 6-7 strangers. It's sort of a very woo, very airy-fairy type of practice, but again, led by a psychologist. And essentially, everybody in that room comes looking to heal a relationship with something. Could be with your lineage, with your past trauma, with generational trauma. Could be with a current parent, husband, wife, whatever. But trying to heal some sort of relational trauma. You can also heal a relational trauma with what's called a metaposition, aka the ego. So I go into this room as like the corporate guy. I'm out of my job, but still, these are all kind of like hippie chicks sitting on beanbags, and then this guy walking in his polo shirt, right? So, and I'm like, all right, I had this psychedelic thing. And by the way, I've never smoked a joint, never done a drug to this day. The only drug I've done, I do that in air quotes, is psilocybin, mushrooms. That's it. So I went through that. I'm like, whoa, okay, that's a new level of consciousness I never understood before. And I got this ego problem and I'm trying to navigate it. All right, I'll come check out your constellation healing with these hippie chicks. So I sit on this beanbag. The leader kind of meditates us in, or drops us into a meditation just to kind of get the room kind of feeling. She's like, listen, one of you will feel drawn. It's okay. You'll just feel it when you want to confront this, you know, relative generational trauma, metaposition. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And I swear to you, as I'm saying, yeah, okay, my hand just like goes up. I'm like, what's it doing? So I stand up and she's like, great. Who do you want to address? I'm like, my ego. And then she looks around the room. She says, who wants to represent his ego today? And a woman across the room says, yeah, I'm feeling it. Me, I feel this. I could be his ego. So she stands up and she kind of, almost in an acting class in a way, she kind of like feels into like almost maybe my energy. Again, very woo. Stay with me, people.
I'm with you. Go.
But she feels into my energy. And then she takes this physical posture of sort of like annoyed. And Heather, I shit you not. Pardon me. I looked at her and I'm like, holy F, that's my ego. Like, that's it. It's exactly what I would have envisioned it looking like in human form. So the guide comes over and starts walking me toward the ego slowly, asking questions. The ego is getting more defensive. And as she's navigating me through this constellation, I confront somebody who represents society, because judgment from society was always something that scares me. And eventually I get over to the side of the room where this person who's playing my ego is. And it wasn't like we hugged it out, but it was like, hey, I'm willing to trust that you're working on this, was sort of what my ego said to me. Actually, literally what my ego said to me, the human form of it. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to work with you on this. So flash forward as I work through this, and the way I work on that is just simply checking in with that question. Is this ego? Is it? And if it is it a bad thing? Ego, what do you need? How are you feeling about this, my ego? To my ego, like internal, I'm not saying this out loud. Yeah. I go through a second mushroom ceremony, kind of a cap on the end, other end of it, right before I move here to the Dominican Republic. I go through the ceremony scared, because the last time it was dark and heavy. And this was the lightest experience. It's something called your spiritual round table. I experienced this thing called your spiritual roundtable. If you can imagine like my conscious self almost going inside to a, say, a table, and sitting at that table are all parts of me consulting on questions that I'm pondering. So my ego's there, my sense of humor, my authenticity, all these different pieces of me are sitting at this metaphorical table. And I'm literally healing, feeling the energy that they're giving in answer to whatever questions I'm considering. And I would even say in my mind, can you send me a picture, or can you consciously give me, or give me some words or whatever to allow my conscious brain to interpret this? And it would. So I got through that ceremony. It was really light. It felt amazing. And I was like, wow, at the end of it, sorry, just before I came out of it, I remember something in me saying, when you need us, now you know where to find us. And so from that point forward, when I need to consult with my inner self, if you will, with the inner child, the ego, all of these different aspects, I meditate, I find the path back there because it was forged through the psychedelic experience, and I ask questions of it. And then I physically can see sometimes myself saying, ego, you're going a little too far on this one. And the ego's like, man, maybe, but I still want this. And I'm like, okay, I'll give you that. Absolutely. That's fair. Also, I'm going to do this. So you can almost see it like a relationship with coworkers or people that work for you, just taking all these different personality types and meshing them together and coming up with a common solution. Airy fairy, but that's how I consult with the ego. I go to that place that I found. I have a conversation with my spiritual roundtable, and I literally just kind of flesh it out and feel like, nah, that's all ego. Or ego, hey, that's a little too much you right now. I got to balance it out. Or yeah, I'm willing to give you that, like, be seen, because I feel like there's other value in being seen.
So fun. So I do the board of directors practice. I've been practicing that for a couple of years. Napoleon Hill, you know, you have mentors, imaginary mentors come in around a table and you consult with them. I've never thought about nor heard having parts of yourself around that table, which I would argue it's probably the same thing because myself is manifested through those people. But anyway, what parts of yourself are around the table again? Did I miss that?
What I recall, the big one's the ego. Like that's the one I check in with the most. But I feel like there's the ego there. There's this like authentic self, this sort of raw, I don't care what anybody thinks. Like this is just me. That whatever that is, I can't even describe that. My inner child is there. Whatever trauma I suffered as a kid, the kid that was bullied in fourth grade and so on. So like the inner child is there. There might be some other metaposition I'm not thinking about, but those are the biggies for me. And honestly, like the biggest check in, like, you know, the COO. Is the ego. That's the one that I go to first to check in with and sort of elevated him, her, it, whatever the heck it is, in the hierarchy a bit. Because again, before it was like, get out of the room, ego. You're not allowed in here. You're bad. You're awful. And now I found the need to bring this person in as a partner. So that's the biggest one. But there's these other small elements of me there as well.
Can you give me an example? And it can be general or specific. I don't care. But just to have some context, let's say you had something come up and you want to consult with your ego in this round table of maybe a time you didn't go with the ego.
Yeah. Well, to consult. So I recently was, I don't know, I guess sort of confronted with a business partnership where I, you know, it felt like the person on the other end, just like, they just wanted to end it in some way, shape or form. That's my feeling. That's what I'm sensing, at least, like all the actions, like, hey, well, this looks good. Yeah. I don't like that. It's not good enough. What about this? It just felt like that person was just looking for a way to get out of it. And so what I wanted to do instantly, the ego, is screw you, I'm out. I'm done. The heck with you. You know, F you kind of thing. And so that's one of those times where you go, okay, what is this? What is it that this is? And honestly, it is like, you know, my ego saying like, yeah, man, screw them. And you got to like, okay, wait a minute. Okay, I feel that. I feel that is all ego. Like that instinct is all ego. What else is there? And I remember hearing like, doesn't cost you anything to have a conversation. Right. So like that was sort of maybe my authentic self, or maybe it's my inner child, whatever, another voice in me or whatever, is like, it costs you nothing to have a conversation. Why don't you have a conversation with this person instead of going after them? Another one is when I had my job, and this was, it's funny, like I'm going to use this example, even though I didn't, it's like, I'm looking at it. This is what I did, but I didn't realize like all this ego stuff happened after this incident, but it's the same premise. But I had a boss that we did not get along. That was actually a really good thing in retrospect, because it helped me like wanting to leave even more at the end of my career. And I remember we had these six different points of contention along the way, like really bad points of contention. And I was dug in, ego, right? Like screw her. She doesn't know what she's talking about. She's evil. She's a bad person. She's weak. Whatever the heck I thought, whatever my ego thought. But I remember at one point going, wait a minute, what would her perspective be on all of these? And going inside to this theoretical round table and saying, I guess if I'm on her side of this, it might've felt this way. And then what about this other incident? Yeah, it might've felt that way. And then again, doesn't cost you anything to have a conversation. Going in and talking to her about, hey, I wrote this down. This is likely how you felt. And for that, I apologize. On this incident, this is something you might've felt because of my action and I might apologize. This is what I meant, but I could see how you felt this way likely. And she was over the moon happy that we had the conversation and it really improved our relationship going forward. So I think it's those sorts of things going in and understanding like, okay, that's all ego. What else do I need to consider here? And that whole, like, it doesn't cost you more to have a conversation is a voice that I got. A time where it was all ego. I mean, I'm sure there are a ton. I know there are a ton. I can't think of something off the top of my head right now, but if it comes up, I'll definitely chime in with it.
Why do you think the ego showed itself to you as a dark form and kind of demonic?
Pissed. It's the best way I could describe it. It was, really? It was pissed. Yeah,
why?
It was.
Why?
So imagine having a best friend that is there for you always, wants to help you with everything you're doing. And you say to the best friend, or the best friend hears you talking about like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And the best friend's like, I can help you with that. And you're like, shut up, get away from me. You're an idiot. Right. And the whole time for years, your entire life, your best friend's still there. They're not gone, but you keep kicking them every time they step in to help. And even sometimes they're like, oh, hey, you wanted this. Look, I took care of it. And you're like, yeah, no, that's whatever. You don't even recognize it. Imagine how that best friend is going to feel if one day you walk in, best friend sitting there with you, and you say to somebody else, I'm trying to figure out what's like certain things, like some things get done, but I can't figure out why. And I'm trying to figure out how to overcome that. And your best friend's going like, are you freaking kidding me? I'm there every step of the way. I'm doing this with you. I'm helping you. What are you talking about? Like, you're going to walk in here with me standing here, jumping up and down, showing you this list of things that I've helped you do, and then wonder where you get strength from, how to get strength, how to become the best version of you. So I was pissed. And it came hard and heavy. I even remember at a point, like being dragged down, like what I would describe as being pulled to hell. And seeing a light, like a peephole of light that was getting smaller and smaller. And I remember saying this to the psychologist in the room. I was like holding on to that light. Like if you can imagine, like it's above ground, like holding on to the edge of the ground so that I didn't get fully dragged in. Because I literally, my conscious thought was, this is where people go mad. This is that guy, like, you know, in a straitjacket, back and forth in a mental facility. Like, this is how that happens. She was kept telling me, like, you need to go through what it wants to take you through to see to the other side. You got to let go. You have to let go of this hand grip I had on earth, if you will, as I was being dragged down to hell. I didn't allow myself to fully let go. I allowed myself to go pretty deep, and it healed a lot for me with me and my ego, where it was the beginning of healing. But it was pissed. It was absolutely upset that I'm ignoring all that it's done for me, and then had the audacity to say, yeah, I don't know. What's keeping me back from, you know, why can't I accomplish stuff sometimes? Like, well, because you're not listening to me. I keep showing you the way and you're not listening to me. So pissed.
Damn. Morality and the ego. How do you gauge between that? Because sometimes you weren't ready for me, Jamie. Like, let's go. Because you think about sometimes what you want hurts someone else or isn't necessarily, and it could be as simple as hurting somebody's feelings or, you know, not being faithful or whatever. I mean, how do you gauge morality with the ego?
I don't know how you gauge it. That's a really interesting question. But here's what's coming to mind as far as answering that. I was saying before, and I believe this, anything bad that you do, anything that you do that hurts somebody else or whatever is all ego. It's your ego out of control, which is why it's so popular to want to kill the ego, suppress the ego. Your ego is not your amigo, all of that stuff. So morality is tough. I mean, I know my kid, I think about my kids, like kids are born. We all are born into this world. You ever walk by somebody homeless and just wonder like, what happened? Especially having kids, right? Like, you're like, that was somebody's baby. They were born the same way my kids were, or I was, or you were. Like, what happened along the way? And I think it's the same way the other way. Like morality is sort of innate in us. And we learn guardrails, you know, societal norms and all of that stuff as we grow. I can't speak to the homeless side of that, but on the side of hurting others, the ego is built out of protection. We feel unsafe at a certain age, 6, 7, 8, depending on who you talk to. And we build this thing called the ego. It's unavoidable. We all are going to do it to protect us from what we feel is some sort of danger. Could be like actual danger, physical or whatever. And the ego is built to kind of figure out a way to protect that. That could be manipulation. That could be whatever. Or it's some sort of, you know, emotional trauma or something interpreted in a certain way. And we build the ego. So I guess there's sort of like your morality is there, you know, but if you allow your ego to become too large a player, your morality kind of suppresses along with the increase of your ego. So I think morality, you have, ego you have, and it's like if your ego is turned all the way up, your sense of morality gets turned all the way down. So balancing between those things, I guess, is the best method. But that's a really, really good question. I don't know how to gauge it. I can't say I know how to gauge it other than what I described about meditating and finding your way and partnering. And honestly, I think even just that, I know how freeing it was to hear it said or say it myself at one point, like, wait, my ego is a good thing. I could partner with this thing. Like, it's not, you know, like anything, nothing is, too much of anything isn't good. Too much fruit isn't good. Too many vegetables isn't good, right? Like moderation, but the ego is not something to stamp out. The ego is something that you should harness and partner with. Like just that permission, I feel like, allows you to be tuned into where's my ego right now so that it doesn't suppress your morality.
Okay. One more deeper level in, and then we'll rise to the surface and get out of the mud. And I'm curious your perception on this. So there's this Alfred Adler, psychologist, who talked about we're born with this sense of inferiority, like this trauma, whatever. And we spend the rest of our lives trying to compensate for that trauma. So you think about the inner child sitting at that table, all the shit that he or she's been through. And, you know, we deal with it in different ways. So I was born poor and I'm going to fight and become the richest, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Lately, I've been really thinking a lot about this because if you think about what drives us is usually a result of our deepest wounds. And there's a light and a dark side to it. And I love what Adler talks about as he says he doesn't believe there's a way to ever overcome or run away from our inferiority. The best that we can do is figure out how to point it towards societal good. So I have this pain. I'm drawn to this. I'll use myself as an example. I didn't feel like I was ever seen growing up. I didn't feel like I belonged. And now I love communication. I want to be on camera. I want you to see me, just like you said. And so there's a dark side to that of Heather trauma. But there's also a light side to it that I'm good at it. And I bring joy to some folks. So it's interesting to me to try to figure out, and I guess it goes maybe back to your roundtable concept or, you know, the whole gauging question. I think I put a lot of guilt on myself, admitting to myself what you just said earlier. I was put on this earth to be seen, because my mind immediately goes to inner child trauma, Heather, versus this is actually a light and a good thing. And I'm just curious, anything I just said there, what comes up for you?
That was really, really good. And to your point, like, you know, I think we vilify trauma, we vilify inner child, like broken inner child, we vilify ego. And I think it's just, you know, kind of reframing our relationship with those. But to something you said a minute ago, so I distinctly remember this, such an innocent thing. You want to talk about trauma. That's not trauma, but I perceived it to be trauma. And I built a life around it that I do try to harness for the greater good of society, but something I'm running from. 6 years old, my grandfather was sick with cancer. This is when I lived on Long Island, New York. And I drew a picture of him at school. This is my mother's father. We went after school to my grandmother, my father's mother. So not the married couple, opposite grandparents. And she was hard of hearing. So I said, she asked what I did in school. I said, oh, I drew a picture of grandpa. And she just struck this pose like, oh, you drew a picture of grandma? She was like so excited. And I was starting to say, no, I drew a picture of grandpa. But before I could finish even the O of no, my mother kind of like stopped me. She's like, don't say anything. Just let her believe it. And again, a lot of work. It wasn't in the moment that I realized. There's a lot of work to realize, like, wow, that's such a simple, innocent moment. My mother was doing nothing wrong. I mean, she's like, hey, like, let her have her moment. But it taught me that other people's feelings are more important than my voice. So from that point forward, I became a people pleaser. Whatever anybody else needed to hear, however else anybody else, as long as they were comfortable, I didn't need to be, right? Like, it's about everybody else, not me. And so today, to your point, that ego suppression was the culmination, or the moment in which I recognized that my ego was pissed about me suppressing it, was the culmination of 6-year-old kid being told not to tell grandma the truth, to please everybody else, kick your own ego to the side, kick your own needs, essentially, is what I would make the analogy of. Kick your own needs of significance or whatever to the side. And so when my ego was allowed to come out and play, when I allowed it to come out and play and partnered with it, it was me saying, okay, I can actually have fun and enjoy and get something from this experience too. And by the way, that people pleaser energy, that trauma I had that my mother, you know, innocently placed upon me, or that I interpreted, I please people by hopefully an interview like this. I hope somebody reaches out and says, man, I got so much from that. That felt freeing to me. I got unlocked because of something that dude said or whatever. So that's my people pleasing energy that I bring to the table from my past trauma. And I think that's what you're talking about with the psychologist, I think you said and quoted him. But the healthy version of that now is trying to balance that with my own needs, not needing to people please despite me, but people pleasing and pleasing myself at the same time.
Tell me if I'm thinking about this correctly, if this is kind of plays into your, I love that young people call it receipts now. I think it's so funny. I love seeing receipts, like I'm 23, your receipts.
I say sus.
You killed it in corporate. You had that thing going for you. Then you leave there and you multifamily investor with over 10,000 members in your community, you become a millionaire. You relocate your family. You had receipts in the last, and this is what, 3 years?
Yeah.
Oh. 3 years. Okay. Comma, a few months ago, you start doing something, tell me if I'm wrong on this, pretty left field from the entrepreneurial leadership, blah, blah, blah stuff that a lot of us are in. You started putting out content about traveling and being a little bit more creative with your stuff and really making a niche in that, and your following's blown up. So all that to say, success in corporate, hit millionaire as an entrepreneur, built a strong ass community. Now you're killing it in content creation. And I know there's a lot of crap in between. And like you said earlier, life's not perfect and beautiful all the time, but there's still just some really huge wins there. And I'm curious, within the context of ego and tapping into that side of yourself, do you attribute that kind of inner work towards following the ego and bringing the ego in that's helped you create some of this stuff, or am I thinking about this incorrectly?
No, God, that's exactly. None of this happens without learning how to harness and partner with the ego. It's just kind of finding your lane, you know, in my opinion. This is what I feel like I've done, at least in the last few years. It's just trying to find my center again. Do you ever hear this? If you take off from New York and fly to LA, LAX, that's a certain flight path. If the flight path deviates, I think it's like half a degree, you end up like 70 miles south in a different location by the time it's all done. So I feel like that's like a lot of us in our teenage years, early 20s, right? Like we've got this sort of center. It's somewhat pure still. And then, you know, we just sort of like, well, I got to get a job. And that just creates that little separation, that half degree off of our center, if you will. And over 10, 20, 30 years, whatever it is in your job, that 70 mile gap emerges, if you will. So the work I've been doing, I feel like, is closing the gap. The center never changes. This is the path. New York to LA never changed, right? Like that's my center. But my 1 degree flight path change over time and settling for something that really wasn't authentically me for whatever reason, maybe because the ego wanted me to make more money, who knows, right? But was my deviation from the path. So now the last few years, and even still now, I'm just trying to bring that flight back around to center, if you will, and stay on my natural path. So all of this work, I hope this answers your question, is trying to refine the lane of authenticity to the best I possibly can. And I could be wrong today. It could be a year from now. I could find another lane, and that's okay. I'm enjoying the journey of just pursuing it, if you will. But the stuff you're seeing, the blow up of the brand, the building of communities, the ability to sustain a life in another country, all of that, I don't know how to relate them all in a word, but they all fit into this sort of feeling of authenticity that I have, this sense of who I truly am. I am a guy who likes to have adventure. I love bringing people together. I love connecting people. I love sharing content. I love this. So this was honestly, like you said, I know it's another podcast. Like, I love this. I love getting on shows, especially with great hosts and having a great conversation. So I just feel like I'm doing things in my lane. And what's crazy about that is, and this is where it gets a little bit like, I can't describe to you completely how that's earning me income, mm-hmm. but it is. I have the receipts. I'm earning a really good income being me. And I don't know that I could fully describe exactly how, if that makes sense. You know, yeah. I could describe how in a practical sense, like, oh, well, here's where the income comes from, revenue, expenses, profit in my bank account. Like I can describe that, of course, but I can't describe to you why today I'll say, I got to film this YouTube video, which is going to pay me $8, you know, with my monetization in YouTube, but how that is absolutely the highest dollar productive activity I know in my soul that I can do today.
Oh, I needed to hear that. I needed to hear that. Thank you for saying what you just said. Damn, I have my business. That's where all my income comes in. And I feel so drawn to make things. And I just told somebody yesterday, I'm like, it doesn't make sense on paper to spend this amount of time doing this when I can spend that same amount of time and like compound what, you know, what I make. But what you just said, you know, that's going to come back around. There's something energetically there. And if I may just be like super honest with you, it makes sense in my logical Heather brain to see, all right, he goes from corporate to entrepreneur and that was seamless and he made great money and all that. Because to me, I'm thinking, okay, on paper, great communication, leadership, networking, there's a lot of transferable skills.
The resume. Right? Sure.
What's interesting to me about you is your, I don't know the word to it, commitment to go into the creative space and kind of reinvent yourself there. And we talked a few weeks ago about how you've been identifying more as a podcaster and a storyteller and a creative, and your content isn't about, I mean, you mention it, but it's not all about business and leadership and I made this much money and blah, blah, blah. You're like, how do you get an Uber around here? You know, and the permission to let yourself be creative and reinvent again. I'm wondering what part of the ego, like you've had to tap into with that, because I would feel like there would be a lot of resistance as a successful man to kind of stay in that lane where you have receipts and to go into another one where maybe you don't.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I'm thinking of the ego and the role in that. And I think this is what I've learned. And I don't know where the ego plays in. You might hear it. You might hear where it does. Anytime anybody, but I'll speak for me, wants to do something different that sort of diverges from the norm instantly. And I'm sure you go through this as well. You question yourself, you wonder, you doubt, you feel silly, whatever it might be. That's what happens when you're looking forward at something through the fog of emotion. It's all emotion. Emotion is what's creating that self-doubt that, oh, if I call myself this, I'm going to sound silly. Like, how will that look? But this doesn't make money. How do I explain it to somebody on paper? It doesn't make sense. That's all emotion. Mm-hmm. To your point about daring, if you will, to take the jump into the next thing and the next thing. When I look back at life in general, let's go corporate career because it's really linear and pragmatic. I took a job at one point in my company, which I was at for 21 years, where they said, hey, we got this department. We want somebody to take over. We don't know if it's going to be around in 6 months. Well, what if it's not? I said, they're like, well, then, you know, good luck. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take it. And I took it. We made something of it. And it actually got me promoted. I took another job where it was 45 weeks a year traveling when we just had our first kid, 45 weeks on a plane a year traveling. And again, there was like, wow, it'd be good experience for you. And I was like, okay, sure, I'll go do it. And it got me promoted. So looking forward into the unknown is all emotion. And what I'm learning and have learned is to look backward at evidence. So it's not the same thing. I can't speak to evidence of if I go from brand, you know, whatever, community builder to podcaster and or creator, like I know exactly what's going to happen because I have evidence of that. But I do have evidence of what happens when I feel like, even though it doesn't make sense, maybe, but it just feels right to take this next step. It's always worked out. Maybe it doesn't work out perfectly initially or perfectly overall, but it ends up working out way better than if I hadn't. Like things happen as a result of making those decisions to step into the unknown. So for me, the reason why I think you're asking this, I feel like the nerve or the ability to jump into the next thing and then say, you know what, I'm going to, like you said, hey, people want to hear about my life in the Dominican. Sure. Like here we go. Like I'll tell you everything, how to get an Uber, what, how much appliances are, whatever it might be. So it's just simply, well, I have evidence that when I follow my heart, when I follow what I believe is my authentic self, when something excites me and I kind of like go through or go with it, it pays off. So evidence instead of emotion is what I try to lean on.
I have a friend who is an entrepreneur, super successful, and I think he's an underground creative. And I was talking to him the other day, and he was kind of teasing, but he said this, and I'm curious your perception on it as a creative, an entrepreneur yourself. He said, yeah, I'd love to be creative, but I also like making money.
Yeah.
And it just hit me, and he was laughing, but it hit me, and I thought, damn, is that what we've trained ourselves to believe is the trade-off? And I know there's some practicality here to be, you know, you have to be business-minded and entrepreneurial as mm-hmm. a creative, right? How do you view that now after you have this underneath your belt here and then you're kind of going into this space? Do you think that we need to build business success first before we can fully be free in the creative? Or is this just a narrative that's just complete BS? What do you
think? My take is it's a narrative. I believe that, and I've had, you know, again, evidence in my life, that if you're a creative and you've got that creative energy and you want to create something and put it out into the world and it serves people in some way, shape, or form, money, accolades, whatever it is you're pursuing. Some people it's like, yeah, I like to make money. Other people it's like, I like people to love me. Whatever that is, whatever that yeah. measure of success or measure of tangible outcome that you need, love, money, possessions, cars, whatever it might be, it comes. It does come. Or at least your ability to acquire those things comes. And what I mean is like you build a creative career, but decide not to monetize it. That's okay. But you could, you've created something that could monetize. Maybe money's not your thing. You want it to stay in your mind pure or whatever, but I don't know. Like I spent 21 years, you know, leaning into the pragmatic. And if you spent any time in corporate America, somebody would know this. Like it was probably seven revolutions of 3 year sameness. And what I mean is like, okay, year one, we're all focused on this. And then we did it. Year two, we're going to focus on that. Yay, we did it. Year three, this other thing. Yay, we did it. Year four was back to the first thing again, because we put all of our focus on one thing. So it was just like motion for the sake of motion in corporate. And then a paycheck came in. Like that was soul sucking for me, right? Like, cool. I'm doing the same thing every third year. And then money hits a bank account. Whereas now it's like, I can build and create and put stuff out into the world that truly lights me up. And then I get feedback from others that, hey, it's helped me quite a bit. Yeah. I'd rather that. And by the way, the money comes, or the car comes, or the love or the praise comes, or the followers come, you know, whatever your measure of success is, come. So money's obviously a practical thing, like you said, but I'm not saying like, hey man, you know, just snap fingers and record stuff and here comes the money. Yeah. You got to have some planning, some sense of it, entrepreneurial. I like what you said, but I guess what I'm internalizing is that question. It's like, how does this make you money? Like when that comes, like, hey man, you talk about Dominican, like how do you make money? Is that a big enough market? It's like, stop. But that's how our brains sometimes work. Like I got to understand how that pays you. And that just drives me nuts. It's like, I don't know. It'll be fine. I'll be good. Thanks.
And I'll wrap this up here. I have one more kind of question for you, and then we'll get you out. That's a lie. I have 2.5 questions left.
I'll sneak them in. I'll be quick.
I am not ready to take anything that scares the hell out of me so bad. I've never done drugs before. I've never smoked, never done anything, just like you. And I know this isn't drugs. This is something different. I also am so ready for a deeper awareness and level of spirituality. And I mean, you know, like I don't get super wooed out. I can go there. What would you suggest for anybody who's like me, who may not be ready to kind of do some of that work just yet, but to kind of really explore and understand on a deeper level what you've shared today? Any books, any resources? What's helpful besides going and drinking tea?
I would say, so this is, again, the practice that I put together some time ago. It was a gift to my wife to get away for a long weekend. And then it became like a ritual that we both do separately. Actually, I just said to her the other day, I know when it's like time for your weekend. You please, she needs to go do a weekend. But the concept of a solo weekend, and the idea is you have to set an intention, whatever that intention is for the weekend. And then I would say this, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday, allow yourself to decompress. Shoot, I got to return that text. Oh man, that email, I got to make sure I send that to that person. Allow yourself to do that. As you go into Saturday, put it away. and just be like, don't worry about, you got an intention, have to have an intention, whatever that is for the weekend. How do I monetize my business? What is the most, what's the next best step forward for me? Whatever that intention is that you want to ask yourself, and just have that present. As you meditate on that intention and then come out of that meditation and just write down whatever, through the weekend, it'll become more clear on paper. Like, you're going to write down gobbledygook after your first meditation because you're just, you're packed up. It's like you're, it's like when your gut is filled with crap. You just got to shit it out. So same thing. And then as you go along, keeping the intention in mind, you do another meditation, grab something to eat, do another one, 30 minutes, hour, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. And you journal out of that. It just, every time I've done this, and I've done it for a few years, I come up with something, a nugget, a thought, a line by the end of the weekend that allows me to go, oh, okay, there it is. There's a sense of clarity. There's a break in the wall that I couldn't see with some light coming through that I'm going to pursue. So without going the route of psychedelics, I think you can have an equal experience by doing something like a solo weekend.
Beautiful. Listen, you did not have to do this. I was sitting here trying to even think a minute ago. I don't even know how I met you, but I'm so glad I did. Like, I'm so glad that.
I can tell you how. I followed you because your content is incredible and I relate so much to your story. So I'm a huge fan. That's how you met me. You were gracious enough to come on my podcast, and then I'm honored that you invited me here.
Well, we're friends, okay, Jamie? Let's just say Heather and Jamie are friends. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your vulnerability, being open to some of this. I can't necessarily have this conversation with everybody in the world, so thank you for having it with me. Where would you like to direct our listeners to? What's the best spot?
So I would say if you want to come to Instagram or YouTube, either one's at the Jamie Gruber. You can do both. If you're interested in, you know, being part of my community, you can go to GoAbundancyEmerge.com and check that out and apply there.
Sweet. Very last question. What is something you are deeply questioning you do not have the answer to right now?
What does life look like at 65? What does life look like at 65?
Good. It looks real good.
I hope so.
There's your answer. Jamie, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey y'all, every Friday I send a behind the scenes video that I only send to my email community. I cover things like the ideation process. I share my screen and show you how I write scripts. I recently hired an IP lawyer and asked him a bunch of questions about content creation. I share my takeaways from that. This is very vulnerable, raw, and real behind the scenes content about being a content creator, and it's completely free. So all you got to do is go to heatherparody.com/BTS. That is also linked up in the show notes to sign up and get access to those videos.